Welcome to episode 322 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
Shout out to Melissa, who hopefully has a speedy recovery after whatever it is that she did to herself, that poor woman. She will eventually be back, I hope.
Yeah.
We are Melissa-less.
Here, Melissa-less.
We are Melissa-less for, I think, like the third episode in a row.
She will be back. She will be back.
I'm feeling the void, though. I'm feeling the void.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is there too much male gaze on this show now?
No, I don't think so.
No, because I don't think we're exclusively in that camp.
No, I don't think so. And honestly, well, it's Glenn Powell all the time anyway. So I'll more than represent for the rest. It's fine. Charlie dropped that new Billie Eilish collab and it is Chef's Kiss.
Oh, it's so good. Anytime
song of the summer.
Anytime Charlie drops a collab, you gotta make mention of it.
The thing is, I hadn't gotten that far down that album yet. Also, the playlist on Spotify, I don't actually know if Guess is on the album. It's on the Spotify playlist. Yeah,
no, it is.
It is. So I finally got down to the end of that list, and I'm like, holy shit, this song is a banger.
On Thursday,
I think it was, I saw an Instagram post. I'm like, what? Yeah. Well, and that song was already my favorite, and now it's even better.
Well, The Girl So Confusing with Lord is
so good too.
An amazing one. And I'm like, okay, what's next? Who's next? Like you could do B2B with somebody. Like there's something coming.
Endless options.
There's more coming. And I mean, it's not an out. Like I've loved Charlie XCX for a long time. Brat's not an album that I would super put into my like that is like knowing what I love in musically, which is so wide. It's such a club sounding record that I'm surprised how much I love it, because I didn't love the Renaissance album from Beyonce, which is a very club sounding record as well, but it just wasn't the club sound that I'm into. But Charlie's record is, I mean, it's Brat Summer. Like it
totally is. I'm down for it.
It fits. Absolutely.
Okay. So now that I've derailed the conversation, now we can talk about movies.
Yeah. And our second Glenn Powell led episode of the year.
I have a story about, so the movie this week is Twisters. We realized that, you know, it's been out for a week and some odd at this point, 2 weeks maybe, I don't even remember. But still, it is the movie that we were all excited to see, and I have a story about this. So we went to go and see a VES screening, so that's the Visual Effects Society. They do screenings sometimes with followed by a Q&A with like the VFX teams. So we had gone to a special screening on the Sunday before I left at Capilano University. It was supposed to be followed by a Q&A. And literally 20 minutes in, when Glenn Powell appears on screen, the projector, you see like a white line on the top and then the whole thing goes black. The projector literally overheated and shut off. I'm like,
he is that hot.
He's that hot. Yeah, that's a good telling.
Glenn Powell is this hot. Exactly.
That is something you put on the marquee, on the poster.
No shit, right?
So hot, he'll bust your projector.
So we waited for a good 30 minutes for them to try to restart it. And then I'm like, okay, I can't waste the day just waiting, hoping that the movie's going to restart. So we did go and see it the following on the Monday. But yeah, it was pretty funny that like I literally got to see 2 seconds of Glenn Powell and then the projector just decided that, no, it's too hot in here. We're done. We're out. They did eventually get it back up and running, but we were long gone by that point. So disappointing.
Oh, it's funny because it's Daisy's movie.
It totally is.
It's totally Daisy's movie. And it's funny that Glenn Powell is kind of the face of the marketing, because, of course, why wouldn't he do that?
It's his summer, right? I mean, he's definitely on a roll. So, I mean, it's good on them to sort of lean back on that for marketing purposes. But you're totally right. This is Daisy Edgar Jones's film. The story is really about her. But yeah. I love this movie.
Can I bring another viewpoint to that? I actually think it's Lee Isaac Chung's movie.
I can go with that.
Yeah.
He brings a lot to this one.
Absolutely, he does. Yeah. Being a farm boy from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Which I think it's like people forget that, but I mean, he made Minari. Arkansas is all over that film too.
Yeah.
And it's, I just think it's just the weird choice, just because going from Minari to a film like Twisters, but he brings all his own sensibilities to this film. And I think greater than Twister, our original film, is this one deals with the humanity and consequence way more than Twister ever did. Twister kind of just moves gleefully from point A to B to C to D. This one has so much more depth to it. And I really enjoy this movie just based on that alone.
Yeah, I think it has a lot of heart. And I mean, for me, what I love about it is just how, like, there's a lot of things I like about this movie. Primarily for me, it's that it's story-based. Like, it very much is about these characters. There are stakes. Like you mentioned, Steve, like there's actually like some real world stakes at play here, even though there's also a lot of destruction, and the destruction is really spectacular. But like what I really love about this movie is how it's really about the characters first and the story first. Mm-hmm. And like this is how you do romance, to be totally honest. Like, this slow burn is like the greatest thing I've seen all summer. And there has been a lot of great stuff this summer, but I just love the fact that there is this relationship that is clearly more than just friendship, but there's never any need to like, let's bring these characters together. Even at the end, like there's no romantic, like there's clearly some chemistry there.
Yeah. But
I appreciate that so much. Like, it's nice to be able to see a movie that, you know, I can take my niece to, and she's not like, ew, they're kissing.
Yeah. And there was a kiss. There was a kiss filmed as well. Like there is proof that there is a deleted scene where they actually kiss, but
I'm
all about it. And either way, they fuck over Paul Scheer. So
I was the only person in my theater that laughed when he showed up.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Especially being a fan of Unspooled and stuff. And well, obviously, How Did This Get Made? I was like, yes.
The movie doesn't work unless the first 20 minutes work. And the first 20 minutes are really good.
They are
really good.
Not only is it really well shot, you actually start to kind of care about these characters, because they all seem like pretty cool people, and they're having fun, and they're just doing, trying to do this thing they've been trying to do for forever, and they want it to work, and then all of a sudden they're in way over their head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, the movie doesn't work, other than Glenn Powell, because he's awesome. But I was really surprised at this one. I actually really like this. It's just really fun, entertaining film. I mean, you don't really get a lot of these anymore. It's just a big spectacle film that actually works with plot, and that usually doesn't happen.
I'm
really happy with that. And also has pretty much all the really great up and coming young actors in Hollywood, all in this film, pretty much. It's not just, you know, Daisy, it's like Anthony Ramos is really great.
Yeah.
Sasha Lane's in it. Nice to see her.
Yes.
Lead singer of TV on the Radio, Tunde Ondabimpe's in this film. He's awesome. And Katie O'Brien's in the film.
I didn't even realize that he was from TV on the Radio.
He's the lead singer.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where the hell am I?
Yeah. A great band.
Yes.
An absolute
favorite.
And yeah, it's just, as you said, it's good for all ages. I think it's probably better than the first one. First one's pretty fun, but it's
first one is fun. But,
I'll add this on the first one. So the Twister is a movie that had escaped me. Like, it came out in 1995. For whatever reason, I never watched it. And over the years, I've seen clips of it. I've never actually seen the entire movie. So before we went to see this new one, I finally sat down to watch it. And I fully agree. It's actually aged fairly well. Like, the visual effects still look pretty decent. And I mean, Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt have really great chemistry. It's a really fun movie, but the stakes are what they are. Like, it's very much like corporate America versus the little guy. Mm-hmm. And I love that this new one doesn't have that. Like, that's not really what it is. It really is everybody against nature. Like, this is unstoppable. Like, it's not something we can really defend ourselves against. And I kind of love that the stakes are so high that we don't really have a right. Like, there's no way to defeat this. Like, you can try, but chances are you're probably not going to succeed. I think that that also brings this, like, elevated, the elevated stakes of the movie. It makes it much more, like, real. And it was weird because, I mean, I was just in Denver, and the first thing I noticed in the airport is in the entrance to the washrooms, it says tornado, it's a tornado shelter. The washrooms are tornado shelters. I'm like, this is too soon. I don't need to be reminded of the fact that I'm in the middle of, like, an area where there might be tornadoes. Thank you very much. Now, I love this movie. I thought it was great. And yeah, it's spectacularly well shot. I mean, no surprise, right? But I think for me, what really sold me was just the story and the chemistry with these characters and just how, like, it just felt bigger than what I expected. Like, I thought it was going to be a really fun disaster movie, and it turned out to be a really great sort of, like, okay, this sounds so contrived, but, like, this exploration of, you know, survival and considering where we are now with, you know, all of these unparalleled environmental disasters that we're suffering through, like, on a weekly basis, it just seems that much more timely. I don't know. I love this movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah, makes the first movie feel a little bit anemic, and it's and its attempt to storytell, because Lee Leslie Cheung does it so much better. 35 millimeter, baby, looks so good. Looks really, really, really good.
It does.
Especially in some certain sequences where that grain just works really well with it. The nighttime rodeo scene into that whole disaster sequence is incredible.
Agreed.
It's so well done. It shot like a monster movie, and I loved it. Made me think of Nope a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though Nope's in broad daylight.
Yeah.
I mean, also to do the influencer thing and to establish it as maybe something vapid, but then bring it all home with the fact that we're out here trying to help the people, and all these what seemingly vapid merchandise sales and everything go back to the people. So that was really cool. I like to see that. This movie has a conscience, and you gotta love it for that reason, but still at the same time never forgets what it's supposed to be, and it's supposed to be a thrilling blockbuster at the same time.
I also, you know, I didn't really want like Turnstile or Black Sabbath on the soundtrack, but the country and western soundtrack just drove me nuts.
I don't like country music at all, but kind of, there, a lot of the song choices really worked for the movie, I thought.
Yeah, so. That was my one problem with the film.
I missed Humans being on the soundtrack. That's nice. Like the greatest Van Halen song ever.
Nice.
I don't know. Did you guys see the story of Glenn Powell having a meeting with Tom Cruise about careers? Have you guys seen the story?
No.
He did an interview. It was either with Variety or with I don't know, some big magazine. And he retold the story about how when he auditioned for Top Gun Maverick, a role he auditioned for is not the role that he ended up getting. So he didn't get the role. And then they called him back for this other role. And so he had a meeting with Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise said to him, well, what kind of actor do you want to be? And he's like, well, I want to be you. So, which I thought was really telling. And then, of course, Joseph Kosinski ends up, like, he's credited with the story idea for Twisters, even though it was written by Markel Smith. But I thought that this was really interesting. And I'm wondering when this all started. How did this all actually come together? I'm very curious about the behind the scenes of that. But
well, and the friendship that the two actors actually have is pretty palpable, because Tom Cruise has been very supportive of everything that Glenn Powell has done now, like post Top Gun and everything. So obviously, and making palling with Tom Cruise in the movie industry is not a bad move whatsoever.
No, it's good for your career. Apparently
it's going to be nothing but good stuff for your career, I think, because, whatever cult that he's assigned to aside, Tom Cruise is very good for movies and very caring with the medium. So I can't hate him for what he's done for film, because it's only positive stuff.
The big hot rumor is Tom Cruise is going to do some stunt at the end of the Olympics. At the end of the Olympics.
Yeah, they're saying something, he's going to paraglide into the closing ceremonies. I'm like, he would be the guy to do it.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is, all I can say is this year's Olympics made me a big fan of rugby seven. Because that's a hell of a sport to watch.
Yeah.
Really, really entertaining. As a guy that gets kind of bored by European football here and there, rugby seven kicks some serious ass.
It's a pretty fast game.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Right,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Just the like, I understand the game, the slow momentum of taking the field bit by bit. I totally get that. It's just sometimes it doesn't keep my attention. Rugby seven kicks ass, and our ladies, for whatever penalized 6 points penalized, who cares? They're kicking ass. So
yeah, they managed really well considering the adversity they've had to fight this year.
Yeah.
We've been like, we're a sports household during like things like this. So
yeah,
we literally spent all, which is why I was almost late, because we watched Olympics until one. It's like, okay, now we need to go do all the running around before we have to get back.
At work, I have the CBC Gem up at my work and just in a little corner. So I've been watching all kinds of stuff, and like stuff I wouldn't watch. Surfing has been gorgeous to watch.
Yeah. It's in Tahiti of all places.
A cinematic guy watching some of the stuff, I'm like, wow, that's real gorgeous. And the backdrop of the beach volleyball, having the Eiffel Tower behind
in the background,
like,
is pretty epic.
Come on. Of course, France is going to be cinematic in their journey. And I mean, as a metal guy, Gojira starting the whole.
Yeah, that was incredible.
You know what? Nobody told me this. So I was in mid-flight while the opening ceremonies were happening. So at the end of the night when we landed, the first thing I did is like try to find the opening ceremonies. For whatever reason,
and you can't.
Even with a VPN, I couldn't replay the PVR that I, because we had recorded it and I have Ignite. So I'm like, I'm going to watch it. Couldn't watch it. So I scoured the internet for, I knew Celine and I knew Lady Gaga. And then it wasn't until the next morning that somebody said to me, oh, I saw it on Instagram. Gojira played the opening. I'm like, what the actual fuck? Let me find this video.
And they ruled.
That show was amazing.
I'm like, and it's so funny because everyone's like, oh, they're satanic. I'm like, they sing about whales and shit, man.
No, they're not, right? They're
what are you talking about?
Environmental consciousness band. Like, what the hell? Like,
what? You've never listened to a single Gojira song in your entire life. If you're coming at me saying that they're satanic, like, fuck right off. You're so unresearched.
It was pretty funny. But yeah, that kicked like some royal ass for sure.
Oh my God. Happy. I love their sound.
Oh, me too.
To bring it to something so deeply rooted in French history is like,
oh yeah,
come on guys.
Agreed.
So congrats to them, that rules. And to see metal on that stage,
so the funny thing was, the general consensus was Gojira is the first metal band to play an Olympic, like at an Olympics, and somebody said, actually no, Nickelback played at the 2010 Vancouver.
They're hard rock, they're not metal.
Hard rock.
I'm not going to bring any extra hate of Nickelback, because I really adore their first two albums. Still to this day, they're hit makers. Until they lost their way and they started singing about beers and boobs. Which I mean, made them an arena band. So whatever.
For sure.
They're not metal. Gojira is truly metal.
Okay, so I completely like sidelined us, but I think it's fair to say that Twister is something that we all liked and we were all recognizing.
Yeah, definitely. And especially for theaters, because I'm hearing now that it's not going to make its budget and stuff, and it's still charting under it. So it's still in theaters right now. So go see it. If you haven't seen it, go see it, because it's the best way to see it. And that 35mm, I can't stress enough. It looks so gorgeous on the big screen.
I also heard today that it's on VOD in 10 days.
The studios are hobbling themselves.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
By not readjusting that pandemic window, they're screwing themselves over. So when they're crying about movies not making budget, they're screwing over their own.
I don't think it helps. I did see a headline earlier this week that, I guess in some markets internationally, it's only opening now. So it's now going head to head with Deadpool and Wolverine, which doesn't help.
Yeah, that's not helpful at all.
That was bad timing on their part. But
yeah. Speaking of that, I wanted to apologize to everybody who listened to last episode where I said that Deadpool and Wolverine would make nowhere near $150 million in its opening weekend. I was a little wrong.
Listen, I think everyone was wrong.
I think it's between 205 and 211 was the North American gross.
Like $2 billion?
Yeah.
It's like nobody goes to movies anymore. How did that open to that huge of a number? Oh, wait. Jesus
Christ. Oh, well, listen. So let's talk about this because I did actually see this yesterday.
Okay.
So we went, like, we never go to a weekend screening anymore. I just, cannot be bothered with people in general. So, but we did go because I'm like, okay, well, if we're going to see it, we might as well see it before we record so that I have something else to talk about. The movie theater was fucking packed. Like, it was a sold out screening. And the thing is, all of the screenings from like 4 p.m. on were all sold out.
It made 90 something million dollars the second weekend.
It was nuts. And what gets I mean, it shouldn't surprise me at this point, but the movie is rated R. Mm-hmm. The number of children at this movie was fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Like, the kid sitting beside me couldn't have been more than 14. No big deal. But dude, seriously, like,
and especially the fact that this movie is just a glorified Kevin Smith movie makes it even worse. Like, how many of those kids actually got those jokes?
Oh, dude. Okay, so Dan warned me. So Dan actually went to see this last week. He saw it in 3D. He's like, you know, I want to see, which is why I went to see it again, because he wanted to see it again. He's like, I don't think the 3D does the movie any favors. Maybe I'll enjoy it more in 2D. So that's what we went to go and see. And I did not love it. I maybe liked it a little bit. I don't know how I feel. Like, some of it, the cameos in the middle, can we just spoil it at this point? It's been 2 weeks. The cameos in that stupid Netherworld bullshit were fucking amazing. And the Johnny Flame callback was perhaps the greatest thing as far as callbacks are in the last like 5 years, because I'm sure everyone and their mother forgot that he had been in Fantastic Four. So it was kind of genius. But the rest of this movie is
masturbatory.
Masturbatory. Yeah, like, the jokes are, some of the jokes are downright like bad, like in bad taste. Like, I groaned. Like, some of the jokes just, how does he get away with this? I don't understand. Like, there's some of them are just bad.
There's only one blade.
Okay, that was funny.
No, but do you think Mahershala Ali thinks it's funny?
Probably not. But I mean, for me, it wasn't even that, those jokes. It was like the act, like the some joke about summer camp. I'm like, dude, really? We're going there? Like,
it's a callback. That one's a callback.
Like, I don't know. I'm okay with violence. Overly violent for like absolutely unnecessary reasons. I didn't think a lot of the jokes were very funny. I'm kind of just done with Marvel. This whole TVA thing was just like, really? This is where we're going with this? Like, I barely understood what was going on in Loki. Now you're going to throw it into this fucking movie? Like, I don't know. I like Matthew McFadden. All great. Emma Corrin was great. I love the cameos. The rest of it, I could have done without. The shocker for me was discovering that Sean Levy is Canadian, because how the fuck did I miss this?
Man.
Nobody told me that.
He's not a very good director.
No.
That is an ugly looking movie.
But you know what? It's not surprising that he's the one directing this, because I've heard through the grapevine and through some people that would know that Ryan Reynolds is not the best. He's not a nice person to work with, especially in this franchise, because he likes to do things the way he likes to do them. So it is not shocking that Sean Levy, a guy that they have made like at least three movies together, is the one to direct this. And he's the only director in this franchise that has actually done press for the movie with the actors. Like, you look at the other movies, they barely did any press with Ryan Reynolds. There's a reason
for that. Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
He seems like a cool enough guy.
Yeah, no. And I'm sure he is, but I can tell you something afterwards. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. Okay. But I'm glad it made all the money. but I'm officially done with Marvel for a while.
Yeah, I'll jump into. I think Steve liked this, so I'm going to let him go last because I didn't. And I'll jump in where Marino is. Other than the cameos and the really funny credit cookie scene, I thought it was funny. As this Sean Levy remade Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. Like, honestly, how many people in the audience knew the villains in The Void? They were all X-Men characters, but did anybody know who they were? No. Didn't explain anything. The villain had no backstory. I'm Charles Xavier's sister. Why is she even there?
I was like, wait, Charles had a sister?
And Steve's going to talk me out of this somehow, but you wait, he'll have an explanation. But I was just like, I should know this stuff. And I like comic books. I just, as Marina said, I am completely comic book movied out. And so yeah, some funny stuff. The cameos were fun, but man.
I will add one good thing before. Sorry, go ahead.
And honestly, take a shot every time Wolverine says, shut the fuck up. At least 25 times.
Yeah. Not the best script, but before like leaning into Steve's liking the movie, because I didn't know that Steve, you actually enjoyed it. And I, not to say that I didn't enjoy it, I just didn't really care for it. It was draining. But the tie-in to Logan was so fucking funny. And literally half the people in the audience were like, wait, Wolverine is dead? I'm like, you guys missed the best fucking movie out of that entire franchise? Like, what is up with that? Literally, like, everybody was like, what do you mean? What do you mean Wolverine is dead? I'm like, really? You guys missed this movie? Clearly, more people need to see Logan.
Yeah, it's really good.
On to you, Steve.
Okay, Steve.
Talk us out of it.
Tell us
how amazing this movie is.
Well, I might as well like go on Front Street and be like, it wasn't just like a mere underselling if I liked this movie. If you go to my letterbox, I fucking loved this movie. I had a lot of fun with this movie. It's this them playing with all the Fox Marvel IP, doing some of them justices in some ways, like Channing Tatum pulling out like the perfect Gambit.
Can I add to that?
Perfect Gambit.
I agree with like 300% because I always wondered why they never had Gambit in the X-Men. And everybody was like, because Gambit's a stupid character. I'm like, Gambit is fucking awesome. Like, he's my favorite X-Men.
Those people aren't cool.
They had an event at Comic-Con where Channing Tatum and a bunch of people announced that film.
Yeah.
And then
they screwed him.
And then they never made it. And I was so upset because I love Gambit. He was always my favorite X-Men.
Which
I
feel vindicated. Well, it's sad because, like, since Channing made a film called Dog and proved that he actually can make a film. So it's like he could have done the film himself by this point. And also, Channing is a guy that grew up with a lot of Cajun people around him and really kind of nailed it. And I don't know. I am still on board with Ryan Reynolds' brand of humor and his snark. Very much being what Deadpool is as a character, and especially like in all the reading of Deadpool comics and everything, it's always in his voice. And I've been waiting for this team up with him and Wolverine for a long ass time. So to get that side scrolling against the Deadpool army scene was like a beautiful moment for me. And I do like, I know how to break the fourth wall. The proposal. I don't know. There's just like some things that just really get me.
Some of the jokes are actually
some of them are good. I'll give you that.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Some of them just didn't work for me.
I'm obviously gonna as the comic book guy, I'm going to hold this film in a place in my heart. And I'm pumped that somebody remembers that Cassandra Nova is a character that exists. And the fact that they cast her with the casting of James McAvoy in this universe where they look like brother and sister, I was like, chef's kiss to that stuff. And I could definitely do another Blade movie with Wesley. I could
agreed.
So do that. I could do another movie with Jennifer Garner. Looks like $1 million in that movie. She looked great. And the effect of Johnny Storm getting killed was fucking just so pretty.
Honestly, that scene was glorious. It was so good.
And for the end stinger validation that, yeah, he said all that shit was fucking hilarious. Just hilarious, hilarious stuff. And you can quote me.
Yeah. Right. No, okay. It definitely had its moments. So now the question is, now looking at the Marvel slate for the last like year, this movie is basically like saved Marvel from the dumps of losing money.
Yeah.
So is Disney going to lean on this and they're going to have Wolverine movies until Hugh Jackman is 95?
Like the joke says in the movie.
That is a valid joke.
It's a very valid one. Yeah. Yeah. I hope what it means is they lean into a harder edge, I hope, and realize that they can do that and make money.
My feeling is that it's not just, you know, the fact, like, I think the fact that it's Deadpool is definitely a selling point.
Yeah.
I think the bigger selling point is the fact that it's Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. I'm not sure that if they continue with, I just don't know if it's another one of these, if it doesn't include those two guys, is going to make anywhere near as much money. Like, I think it's just like at this moment, this works. But they're going to overdo this and kill it. You just know it. Because
I think this is like that Endgame moment. I think this is a one-off anomaly.
Agreed. But they'll try. You know they'll try to lean into it.
But I think that's also their misgauging of the pulse of where.
They don't learn lessons very well.
No.
It's probably not going to help. I really want an R-rated Star Wars film. Like, give me Han, Lando, and Chewie doing some smuggling shit. That'd be sweet.
That's what Lando. That's what the Lando shit should be. The Donald Glover stuff, but it won't be.
And it's an R-rated film. They do a bunch of really dastardly things because they're smugglers. So yeah.
Well, because the good things that came out of Solo is just always going to be regarded as a failure. So nothing of that they'll ever pull for it. But a gender fluid, like, will fuck robots. Lando Calrissian, they won't pull from that.
Oh, fuck no. Hell no. Too much for Star Wars.
No, I'm sorry. I had to bring the droid fucking into that. So
I also really hope that all those parents who brought their kids had to explain what the word pegging meant to their children.
Oh, so much. There's so much that I can't even imagine. Yeah.
The references to cocaine, which were fucking hilarious.
So funny. I love Blind Al. Leslie Uggams is so fun in that role. I like that they brought that callback from two, that he what's his name gets no speaking lines anymore.
There's some definitely some great moments. I just thought it was a lot. The movie was a lot.
Oh, and the Cavalrine.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. And he did the rock the fists out to get the blades out. I was like, come on.
I was on like a different wavelength than pretty much everyone else in the theater, because I laughed at all the places that nobody else. I'm like, I am okay with this. I am okay with this. But I still, for me, the greatest moment was still Chris Evans. Cause I'm like, this is like so genius. I can't even begin to like this. I appreciate this. That was a moment that I thought, okay, this was really funny.
A way to give one of the dirtiest lines in the entire movie to their daughter, Inez.
Right.
Like, good job. Good job.
Oh, geez. It really has some moments.
I also like the line, he died of murder, you dumb fuck.
I have a feeling they're going to be quoting this for a while.
There's a bunch of good lines in it.
There are some good ones there. So yeah, Deadpool and Wolverine making all the money in the universe.
Yep. Continue.
Marvel walking away a winner, at least for now.
So, well, as long as it slaps Trap this weekend, then I'm fine. Okay. So I'll have more to say about that.
I was going
to
say
in a minute. Does Alien Romulus flop because of Deadpool?
I hope not. I have good feelings about Fate.
I'm with you, Steve. Yeah. This movie looks badass.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I love the way that Fede moves his cinematography. And he's using the same guy, too. So it's like, I'm very excited about
the
this.
The trailers movie. Are so good.
Yeah.
So good. I mean, it's Dan's like, I showed it to Dan. I'm like, what do you think of this? Because I really want to go and see it. He's like, I don't know. It looks like a lot of other horror movies. I'm like, I know, but it's set in the Alien universe. Like, this looks amazing. And I don't know. I'm definitely in for it.
I'm all for the continued rise of Kaylee Spaney. Let's bring it. Let's bring it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with this. Okay, so let's transition into Trap, which you guys both mentioned. I haven't seen it because I refuse to pay money to see a Shamhammer movie at this point. Mm-hmm.
I read something on the internet this morning that explains this movie to a T. M. Night Shyamalan on opening night did a Q&A at a screening and said, I thought this movie is a concert film for my daughter.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The 2024 is the year where M. Night Shyamalan's like, have you met my daughters?
Yeah.
Would you like to? And we're like, no, not really. I mean, you haven't done anything like amazing in the last little while that I would really want. And he's like, I don't care. You gotta. So she made this movie and you're like, oh, okay, great. That was like forgettably almost nothing. And he's like, did you know my other daughter sings and writes her own music? And you're like, I didn't really want to. He's like, here she is in a big concert format. You're like, I didn't really. They're like, but it's okay. I brought Josh Hartnett, who is doing some seriously great work with a terrible, 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 terrible script. And
could he write himself more into situations that he can't get out of and then just uses some wicked bullshit to get out of it?
Complete bullshit. And like Return of the Kings himself. with endings like four or five different times. Yeah. This movie is hamstrung from almost the get-go, and it gives itself an out. I thought like at the beginning, I was like, oh, his daughter's not real. That for a bit of the film, and then has a character like directly see her, and you're like, oh, okay. So now where does this film go? And like, I don't know why Knight keeps putting himself in movies because he is arguably the most wide-eyed idiot every time he's in a film.
Yeah.
Anytime he puts himself in a film, he gives himself more lines than consciously write.
Yeah.
In this film.
And the really worst part of this film is, you know, Steve really killed that guy in the trailer last episode, the exposition machine. There's more of them.
Oh, so much, so much. And he even gives him a stinger, too.
Yeah, I know. And it's just like, he puts all of his plot into this guy's monologues. Just all of it. He has no idea how to do it.
And the only way you do exposition in M. Night Shyamalan is by having a character talk directly to the audience in a one shot. And it's the only way he knows how to do it. This is the worst shit since The Happening.
Old's worse. I hate it. Old.
I'm still trying to figure out how a director that has been around as long as Shyamalan has, who hasn't actually made a movie that has been successful in any way, either like commercially or by critic, like a critically acclaimed film. How he keeps making movies. Like, is he just self-financing at this point? Because, I mean, he hasn't made anything good since, like, what? Like, the mid-90s?
Late 90s? What's his production card?
Knock of the Cabin was good.
I didn't have a problem with Knock of the Cabin either. What's his Blinding Edge? Is that with his...
This had a Warner label before it.
Yeah, but so there's
he,
also...
He had a studio.
There's the Blinding... Because the Blinding Edge, that's his company, right? Yeah. So, yeah, no, he had distribution. And he got... forget his other daughter's name that did the, because it's so funny because The Watchers was like literally just a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling. What would I rate ahead of it? Which one would I put ahead of it at this point? Watcher or Trap? I'm not even sure at this point. They're both equally painful.
I thought Watchers was better shot. I'll give it that.
Yeah, I'll give it that. Because Trap looks like shit.
It does.
It looks like shit. It looks like they got, and not to hate on this, but it looks like they got the Eras tour director just to do everything. Because like the stage stuff looks okay, but everything else looks like exactly the same. Which I don't know. This movie flabbergasts me. It really does.
Yeah,
flabbergasts me. I mean, at this point, the only thing that I thought was great, like I haven't seen it. The only thing that I'm happy about this movie is that apparently Josh Hartnett is back, and I'm totally okay with this. he was a good actor before he disappeared off the face of the earth. So it's nice to see that he's making a comeback, whatever that looks like. I just wish
he has a charisma to him that is just saying this crap.
It's just horrible. Every line is horrible. Like when the guy, that guest singer, comes out of the trap door and he sees his out to get to the backstage and he looks at his daughter and he goes, "Hey, you want to go down there?" What?
I'm not a responsible adult at all. Let's just go down there for no reason.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, just so much fucking what?
I almost felt bad for the daughter. She wasn't bad.
She's so trapped in just a shit thing. Kid Cudi is terrible. Like, there's so much.
Yeah,
terrible.
And an actress I like shows up in the final act. And
oh my god! Just drop it right now. It's Alison Pill.
Yeah,
I love Alison Pill, but she is doing some of the worst shit I've ever seen out of her, ever in the history of acting.
Yeah.
Just, oh my god!
And the daughter of M. Night is just not good. Not good.
The fact that they make her fucking Columbo for the end of the movie is like, what? There's so much of this movie that I'm just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Don't worry, Steve. TikTok can save the world.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And even the twist, the very last second twist that our killer, that Cooper is still going to be on the loose. And all because he took a spoke off of a bike that everybody was watching him do. How is that possible? How?
So next year, are we going to get a glass trap? James McAvoy.
That's what I was waiting for. That twist.
It becomes like a Hammer horror universe thing where Bruce Willis almost drowns in a puddle, but still saves them. I don't know.
I actually forgot about that James McAvoy. Right? I actually fucking love that movie, but mostly
Split's great. Like James McAvoy. Split's great. Glass sucks.
I forgot about that.
Glass sucks. Okay, yes. I'm gonna upset all of us even more. This movie was shot by Soyambu Mukdipram. Who did Call Me By Your Name and Suspiria, other incredible films. Challengers. This year, he did Challengers, which is one of the best looking movies of the year, and Trap, which is one of the worst looking films of the year.
How is this possible?
Like, I don't know. M. Night drags you down. He drags you down.
He seems like the kind of guy that just likes to smell his own farts. Like, I just
even don't. I mean, you brought it up a little bit with the Q&A at a screening, but like the way the amount that his marketing is romanticizing that this is the greatest thing he's done in his career is ad nauseum, especially when you see the final product and you're like, well, where was that movie? Even having a cool Fandango poster with a cleaver with blood on it is so misleading. And so even having him being called the Butcher, because they called him the Butcher, and then his big reveal is he was going to gas a dude.
What the fuck?
Because M. Night doesn't care about his own story that he's setting up. He doesn't care about any of the path he set before it, because he's going to interject his own bullshit into it. Even in the final twist giveaway, he's going to bring things into it that there's still, like, how did I know that there was at all possible within that? Like, it's all bullshit.
It's like, write a little plot, put my daughter over, write a little. Yeah. That's the movie.
So it's the question becomes,
do I take what I know of the fact that this movie is going to be sick balls and not watch it? Or do I watch it because I have this strange fascination with watching this fucking movie? Like, I just know I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch this at some point, which, like, I don't even know
if it's theatrically necessary.
I'm not going to the theater to see this.
Okay.
Not happening.
I don't even know if it's at all necessary, to be honest.
Well, this is
do you it. Need to, do, Bill, I don't know. Am I stirring people?
No.
I don't need to see Old either, but I watched that piece of shit. So I mean, I don't know. I feel like I need to see
you
it.
You need to watch that Josh. just for Abby Lee spinning in a cave, breaking all of her bones.
This is no. the thing.
For like, no I feel reason.
Like I need to, but.
No, the little kids are growing older. Let's fuck.
Damn you, Alex Wolf.
Yeah.
Or was it Nat? Well, was it Nat or was it Alex?
One of them. Yeah, one of them.
Yeah. Oh, man. Guys. Okay, so Trap is terrible.
Yeah, okay. It's so fucking bad. So bad.
Wait for, if you're paying for Netflix, wait for it to hit that. Do not pay real money for it if you're already paying for Netflix.
No.
Is it going to be on Netflix?
I don't know.
Probably. Who knows? Poorly. Who cares? At this point, I just hope it just spins off of this earth into oblivion and nobody ever thinks about it again. Though I would like it to boost Josh Hartnett's career, but
me too.
At this point, I don't think he even really cares.
No. Okay.
He's already exited Hollywood once and
please
didn't really
tell
care.
Me that you guys have seen something that is actually good.
I've seen some okay stuff.
Okay, because I've seen some stuff and I maybe liked one of them. So somebody bring up this show because so far there's been negativity for a little while. Okay. So let's bring things up a little.
I'll slide through first here. I'm not starting off with amazing. I saw Young Woman in the Sea, which is Joaquin Ronning's new film with Daisy Ridley based on a true story. It's hard for this movie to be more memorable when a film like Naiad exists, which is a different story, but also about like endurance swimming and stuff. Daisy Ridley gives like a serviceable performance in like a Disney sports biopic that went straight to Disney Plus. Which kind of shows where the state of live action Disney films are right now. I think you're rarely going to see them in theaters anymore. This is like a Queen of Katwe. Like that movie would have got the Disney Plus treatment at this point. And I guess like Joaquin Ronning is the guy that you go to for a film on the water at a certain point. I'm starting the crawl through the Justice League animated the Crisis on Infinite Earths movie, but holy fuck are they bad. Like where did these Disney DC animated films fall apart?
We were supposed to be doing good movies. Come on.
I'm sorry. So I won't be much on that one, but the animation is lazy and the script is even worse on that one. So I don't know where I'm going to entertainment for value for this one going through.
Not to change the subject, but the new Batman cartoon rules.
Oh, Cape Crusader! Yeah. I do want to watch it. Hamish Linklater,
yeah, good stuff.
Doing Batman, I'm into it. I'm into it for sure. So I'll definitely be checking that out. One that Marina brought to the podcast a little while back. Babes, got a chance to check that one out. Loved that movie. That movie is so funny. Right? Probably one of my favorite credit sequences of Michelle Buteau crawling through. The hospital in labor is so funny. There's a little bit of wobbles in the third act, like tailing out of the third act that I was like, but I think the fact that both Alana Glazer and Michelle Buteau have been friends for 20 plus years really helps the chemistry of this one. And The Hasan Minhaj as Buteau's husband is so funny in it. I love the cast. I love the script. And Pamela Adlon makes her feature debut after directing, I think, all of the episodes for Better Things. Give her more stuff. She's absolutely capable. So I really dug her work in this one. Last stop in Yuma County. Welgo sent me this Blu-ray. And I didn't know it was going to be one of my favorite films of this year without being hyperbolic about it. Jim Cummings, Jocelyn Donahue, Richard Brake is in this one, Phase on Love, Michael Abbott Jr., Connor Paolo, and just a multi-character, like one central-ish location noir thriller. Really, really solid because the director, first time guy, Francis Galuppi, makes that camera fucking work. Oh, it's doing so much good stuff in this. And obviously it appealed to certain people because he is doing the next Evil Dead film. And this is like a movie that has like no ad campaign behind it whatsoever, just kind of indie buzz. And I think it's deserved of all that buzz. And I wish people were talking more about it because it's a really, really solid film.
To check that one out.
Yeah.
Add it to my watch
loved
list.
Loved it. Another one that I really, really loved. It's new in kind of limited release right now. I think just as of Friday. It's called Kneecap. And it's written by a guy named Rich Pepiat. And it's like a Gaelic Irish film about two brothers who kind of like through serendipity end up joining forces with the school teacher and making a rap group called Kneecap. And I didn't know until the very end of this film that Kneecap is a very real group that raps in their original kind of a mix of the original Gaelic and just straight up Irish tinged English. And it's a biopic that also features the mighty Michael Fassbender, who plays their dad in it and who just feasts on the screen every time he's on it. But I loved this. I loved this movie a lot. And it even led me to following them on Spotify and adding a more than a few of their songs to my liked list. Even though I don't really understand the lyrics, unless I'm reading subtitles on it, I'm digging them as a group for sure. So Kneecap was really, really solid. I watched The Idea of You, and I was just came away middle of the road on that one. Anne Hathaway is just doing the lion's share of work to keep that movie on the rails. But it's funny that it sets you up with its ick, like right away, with one of the fan moms in the meet and greet, and then just crashes hard into like she's gonna perform the ick, and I don't know, like I just. This Nicholas Gallet scene is kind of slowly working on me. Marion George is really good because of his work, but I don't know. This movie is just kind of forgettable, and especially for a Showalter movie, I'm like, yeah, it's just kind of middle of the road.
I still really liked it. I recommend it.
She's really pretty.
Yeah,
Anne Hathaway,
and that is the entire film.
Yeah, that's essentially.
And you know what? There is nothing wrong with.
Yeah,
there's something to look at for everyone here, but yeah, Anne Hathaway has never looked or been better. Like she's on like a steamroller. I'm like, I will give her all the things. I'll watch everything.
But what's his name? A lead character. He's very Harry Styles coded. So like his wardrobe, yeah, like everything, okay.
Yeah,
everything is so that. Harry Styles. This is a One Direction mum fucking One Direction fanfic. At his heart.
I wonder if that's what it is. I mean,
that's got to be the inspo.
I was going to say, I mean, it is based on the book. I would not be surprised if that was the inspo for the book.
Part of me hopes that Anne Hathaway's character went to Coachella and watched the Deftones.
Yeah.
I don't think she did.
Yeah.
Tells me that that's wishful thinking.
I want to see her romance Gino Moreno instead. Yeah. I'm into that. And then she goes on tour with Crosses.
Listen, this should be a kink-filled movie. I would probably watch it.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. I watched Purple Rain for the first time. I got it on 4K. Morris and Jerome all day. They're the best reason to watch that movie because the rest of the movie is Prince being completely unlikable and then looking tough for when doves cry, like going by the lake and everything with his wide-angle stance. To look all tough, he is just horrendous. I as far as the performance scenes, I never really understood I know Prince songs. I never really understood it because it just wasn't at a time where I think I was ready to understand it. But man, that guy's got a lot of charisma on stage and definitely has all the presence in the world. But the fact that his whole redemptive arc comes through the song Purple Rain is so such nonsense, especially when he basically told his band, I don't want to sing your stupid songs. And he's such an asshole. And like all the Apollonia stuff is like, why does she even like him at all? Like in any frame of reference whatsoever.
I don't think that movie is aged well. To be honest.
cleanse yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah, like the appeal of Prince is definitely like the reason to watch that movie, yeah. But it's so not good.
Yeah, like, no, it's not great.
You are right about Morris Day and the Time. Oh,
hell yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. And starting with Jungle Love in the beginning, because we're talking Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I was doing the whole thing along with it because I've watched Jay and Silent Bob so many times. So it was like muscle memory at this point. That stuff's great. I watched an Arrow Blu-ray I've had in my collection for a long time that I've never watched before called The Ghost Waits. It's from 2020. It was written and directed by Adam Stovall. It's all in black and white. But basically, it's about a host, a ghost that's haunting a house. And then a guy shows up to transition the family that was there and abandoned it beforehand and get it ready for the next ones that like falls in love with the ghost. And the ghost is going through this like weird, like bureaucratic existence being a ghost. It's a weird movie, but it kind of worked with me. It kind of feels like it's borrowing a bunch of different ideas from a bunch of different ghost comedies and stuff like that. But it ends up kind of winning me out in the end. It's also like super like about sad people, which I thought was interesting as well. So it was okay. And then I watched National Anthem yesterday with Charlie Plummer. And Charlie Plummer, I always feel like he is like the most underrated young actor that always makes really interesting choices. And this is a movie that I would compare to something in his past, like Lean on Pete, that is a really fantastic fucking movie that nobody saw and nobody will see. But National Anthem is basically he is... he does like odd jobs like where like the pickup truck pulls up and grabs a bunch of Mexicans to do a construction job. He does like those kind of jobs, ends up pulling a job for a queer rodeo company and finds his calling and finds his people within it. And I just thought it was a really beautifully done film with just a lot of really, really, really great shots. And I mean, we started off this episode talking about Twisters, so to bring like a ranch rodeo movie as well kind of feels fitting. But yeah, I really dug this film, and that's it. That's all I got.
Nice. I'm thinking I might need to add that to my list. I constantly have Letterboxd open because this is what happens whenever we talk. It's like all these movies to my watch list. I'm probably never gonna get to watch them all, but I'm gonna try.
Yeah, this is there.
That's awesome. Okay, well, okay, since you had a good run there, I'm going to let you finish, Bill, but I don't have a lot on my list, so I'll quickly just go through what I did see. I finally caught up with Bad Boys Ride or Die. I didn't need to see this. It just was not that good. I don't know. Martin Lawrence is just weird at this point. Am I the only one that thinks this? Like, he just seems like he's in another movie or something.
That's kind of what I liked about it.
He feels so disconnected and just out of the loop. Like he's not in on the joke or something. I don't know. It was too long. I don't know. It was fine, I guess. The most interesting thing is still the behind the scenes and how they got some of those shots. Because like visually, it is a pretty interesting looking movie. It's just so boring. Like, I haven't seen an action movie that's been this boring in a while. It's boring as fuck. Could have done without it. I did watch, I saw the TV Glow. It's clearly not for me. I don't understand this movie in any way, shape, or form. I do not get the appeal at all. Like, at all. Like, nothing about this spoke to me. Weird. So what am I missing?
I really dug it.
I know. And that's the thing. That's one of the reasons why I saw it. Because I'm like, well, Bill liked it. So, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. Nothing about it worked for me. I felt just so out of step with the movie from the get-go. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing from other people, but I liked the buffiness of it.
So this might explain why I didn't like it, because I don't like Buffy. Never
okay. to the point where there was a Buffy person in the film. Did you catch that?
No, I did not.
Okay. There you go.
I haven't seen it yet, so I...
Yeah, I'm trying to... I didn't think Steve had seen it, so I'm trying to be very... I think it's good, because I know people who haven't liked it, so Don't feel bad about it.
I did think that she was making some the film makes some interesting choices. Like the filmmaker Jane makes some interesting choices. I like the way that some of the like the TV stuff and the reality stuff kind of come together. And that, like at some points when the characters are watching the television, like that becomes what you see. And clearly that's important. This just didn't work for me. I found the time jumps to be like weird. I don't know. It just didn't work for me for whatever reason. I appreciate that it's trying something different, but overall I just found it boring and I just did not care for any of the characters and it just didn't work for me. I did like A Quiet Place Day One. Yay. Give me all of the movies about having pizza as the last thing you want to do on Earth while there's an alien invasion happening. That is like, make it as low stakes as possible. Also, this woman wants is a slice of fucking pizza. And she will do anything to get it. It's so good. Like the fact that that Michael, what's his last name?
Sardosky.
Yeah, that he leans Sarnowski. Into this. Sorry. Yeah, that like he leans into this very human thing. The whole thing is just, it's a wonderful movie. It's so good. I was completely engaged from the opening scene. I loved it. I think Lupita Nyong'o was fantastic. And Joseph Quinn is pretty good. I don't think I've seen him in anything else. And then I went looking and I'm like, oh, look, he's the new Johnny Flame. It's like 360. Like we're back to the beginning. I really, really like this movie. I thought that the, a prequel of Quiet Place, really? But it really, really works. But I kind of think we might be done in this franchise. Like, where else are we going to go with this? Like,
no, I think
we've done the movie, the sequel, and now a prequel.
Yeah,
I don't know, but it does really work. It looks great. I think we see more aliens in this one than in the other two,
and more closely too.
Yeah.
That scene in the theater lobby—that's the closest we've gotten inside, like the head.
Yeah, I thought that it was really, really well used. I like the use of sound, like the way that, and even like just the visual of. Sometimes they're just like when they're running across the city and you just see like the destruction that comes down on them. I thought it was a really, really great use of that. I like this movie a lot. I thought it was fantastic. So thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, I'm glad that you weren't like totally swayed by our like gushing review last episode and had such high expectations that it were like, oh no, it's not that good. I'm glad you liked it.
No, I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was really, really well done. I think you guys did a great job of selling that one. It really is worth checking out. It's really fantastic. I liked it more than that, like the sequel. The middle movie.
I said it was my favorite in the series, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
I still like the original quite a bit, but this is really well done. It's very, very good. And then last but not least, something I didn't care for all that much, How Music Got Free. So this is a two-part documentary. It's on Paramount Plus. I kind of expected more. So it's an interesting take on music piracy in the 90s. And how Napster kind of came to the rise of things. But it's actually from the perspective of, well, some of the artists that were affected, but also the people that were involved with the actual act of piracy, where they were literally stealing the CDs off of the manufacturing floor and how the music ended up online. I just expected a lot more, maybe. I didn't find it was that good. Like, it has some great, like the idea, the concept is great. And they have the people, like Eminem is in it, 50 Cent is in it, Method Man makes an appearance. They have the guys that were actually like on the factory floor that were stealing the music, like the physical discs. And it's just kind of boring and it doesn't bring anything new, even though it is digging into this new side of this thing. It just feels like it's maybe 20 years too late. I don't know. And then the fact that it's a two-parter is...
Yeah, kind of like it was an hour and a half too long.
I agree.
The main guy from the processing plant, he was quite the character. I liked him quite a bit.
Me too.
In the fact that he started trying to make money out of it and he was totally balling out and that's what got him caught.
Yeah.
But it's way too long.
No.
It should have been better. I agree.
I find, I find the execution in a lot of these Paramount Plus documentaries are is not exactly there, because there was one about Don McLean's American Pie, the Day the Music Died. But also, it's like an interesting story at the heart of it, but the way they execute it is just, it's just so bland, and it's just, there's just no, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of great MTV substance to it.
Yeah, MTV documentary films need somebody kind of like guiding the way a little bit better, but they're falling into the same it's the Netflix trap, right?
Yeah.
Where they make these stupid documentary series that are like 3 or 4 episodes where they could have been one movie.
Yeah.
A 90-minute movie would have been more than enough, but all of a sudden it's 4 episodes and like 5 hours later and you're like, what the fuck?
That I just the Lollapalooza one was just like, here's another band.
Yeah.
Here's another band. I'm like, is there anything like cohesive to this?
Yeah.
No, it was. Yeah. And that was like 4 or 5 episodes. That's just like, oh,
yeah.
Show more Trent Reznor.
Yeah. Right.
Hell yeah.
Any day of the week. Yeah. But that's all I've watched. This was it. So Bill, bring us home. Give us some good things.
I watched a movie called Ghostlight, which I really, really enjoyed. It's about this family who's, the youngest son dies and the family's not taking it very well. And the father is really not having a good time. So he joins a theater group that's doing Romeo and Juliet. And it's his way of coping with the son dying. It's a little dramatic at times, and it's a little on the nose at times too, but I thought it was really good. Super underrated, big film at Sundance, won some awards, I think. And it got like a very limited release, so you probably have to search it out. I think it's on VOD now, so you might be able to see it there.
Definitely nothing Canadian came.
No, but it's really good. Tugged on my heartstrings, and I'm a crotchety old bastard, so that's enough on that one.
But those that know, you really aren't the crotchety old bastard.
Thanks. I saw a couple of Marina said we're good. I saw I Am Celine Dion, which was better than I thought it would be. Actually, I hate her music so much, but I kind of like her as a person. And the fact that she had the balls to show the world exactly what was happening to her in really graphic detail takes a lot of stones, and I will give it to Celine Dion. And
that scene is like intense.
Yeah. And also you see her not being able to sing. And that also takes a lot of stones. So good for her. And I see she came back at the opening ceremonies for France, and she sounded really good. So hopefully she's doing better.
She's got a new residency coming too. So,
oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. And I saw A Family Affair with Nicole Kidman and Zac Efron, which was garbage. Just so generic. And, I hate saying this, but what's going on with Nicole's face?
We don't know. We lost track 10 years ago.
She has a Joker smile. It's not good. And Zac Efron is fine. But Joey King, I like Joey King. She's quite funny in the film. She's it's just not good. It's exactly what you think it is. Nothing is like even close to being well written. And the acting is not very good. I didn't like it at all. And I take the Anne Hathaway movie over that. Sorry, Steve, but that movie sucked. I saw the live to tape ghost movie documentary live show called Right Here, Right Now.
Which is a fucking amazing! Don't you dare diss this movie.
No, I thought it was pretty cool. They have a really awesome looking show.
I went to go see this concert because I was like, I'm never going to get to see fucking Ghost at this point. So I might as well go see. And now I'm even more bummed. But the whole behind the scenes stuff was just fucking silly.
Yeah, totally.
Just fucking stupid. Just give me more concert footage.
They kind of look like low budget Rammstein, but they're still pretty cool. And Little Sunshine's a banger, so play that one loud.
They have a lot of bangers, dude.
Yeah, but it was pretty cool. I don't really think of myself as a fan of the band, but yeah, it was a pretty cool show.
It makes me think Sleep Token movie when.
That would be cool.
Hey, I'm down.
I saw this really weird movie called Tuesday. You guys heard of this?
Oh, with Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm going to try to explain this and not sound like a complete lunatic. So a bird is the angel of death, and it looks like a parrot, and it is going around killing people. And the bird comes upon this young girl who is about to die, and they become friends, and it disrupts everybody dying. So everything that should be dying is not dying. So they become like zombies and like walk like zombie cows and zombie people who should have died. And this bird should have killed them. But the little girl stops the bird from... I sound like a complete maniac right now, don't I? Okay, so...
I'm like, wait, is this like The Crow on acid?
It kind of is. And it's really weird. But I kind of got to say I kind of like that it's weird. And Julie Louis-Dreyfus does something to the bird, and she becomes the angel of death, and she starts killing things. It's like all over the place, but it's so weird. It's good. Like I can't even explain it. Like it shouldn't work, but it kind of worked for me. I like weird stuff. Like show me something I've never seen before. And I've never seen anything like this before. And it's a weird A24 film that I didn't even know existed until like a week ago. So if you want to see something really screwed up, it's kind of your film if you want to see that.
And it's a feature debut too. I love when somebody takes chances, when a film that takes infinite chances gets put out like this. And yeah, this Dana Onyas Pusik.
Yeah.
Made this film.
It's pretty well shot. The acting's good. It's take a chance on it. You might dig it, or you're going to think it's the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
Well, you know, it kind of reminds, like, doing a recommendation like that, it kind of reminds me when, like, Nacho Vigalondo made Colossal.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got something weird for you. It's about a girl that gets blackout drunk and then turns into a giant monster in Korea.
Yeah. I saw the world premiere of that film at Fantastic Fest and did shots with Nacho after the film. So
Nacho's amazing.
Yeah.
He's an amazing dude.
He's nuts.
He's absolutely nuts. And he doesn't give a fuck what you think. That's what I love about him.
And Tuesday is shot by Alexis Zabe, who did Florida Project and Silent Light.
Yes.
Like what the actual fuck?
Yeah,
this is going high up on the watch list for sure.
It only came out in limited, like probably 2 months ago.
Yeah.
From Elevation of all companies. And I don't know what's happening to it as far as physical release.
I'm going to be watching this. ASAP.
I don't know who the audience is. This movie's for
me.
Weird guy goes to film festivals.
Absolutely me. Like, does this feel like something you would have found at the film festival?
Yeah,
kind of. Sweet. Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely strange.
Okay.
Wow, the Letterboxd reviews are fucking all over the place.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love polarizing films, especially the ones that are going to take a chance that you haven't seen anywhere before. And for Julie Louis-Dreyfus to take a chance on a film like this.
No kidding.
I think she's great. And when I see her do films like You People, it makes me sad. So
yeah, she's doing some pretty weird stuff in this film. So you'll probably dig it.
I'm super pumped. I'm so pumped.
Cool. That's it for me.
Okay.
So we're doing Alien Romulus, right?
Well, this is my thought. I'm like, I know we need to see what's coming, but I think that that's definitely my pick.
There's a couple other ones that I would like
to do. There's some good stuff coming in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so August 9th, this is already press screened, and the people are not allowed to talk about it until 2 hours after the film was released. So you just know it's incredible quality. Borderlands, which supposedly is the worst film of the year.
I have tickets for it for Thursday, so I will be seeing it.
I know multiple people who have seen it and say it's just awful.
Okay, so I'm looking confused because I have no idea what this is.
Eli Roth directed the adaptation of a video game that's done like three very successful video games out of it. And
that's why it sounds vaguely familiar.
It's got Cate Blanchett and it's got Kevin Hart.
Oh, that movie. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay. Yeah.
It looks super colorful. The trailer is borrowing every single bit of aura from Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes,
I think it's been done for a couple of years. Like, I've known about this film for a very long time. And wow. Yeah, it's not good.
Well, also, this is the guy that directed Death Wish, which is might be one of the worst films I've seen in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I agree. Also that week, the year of Dan Stevens continues. Cuckoo.
Can't wait.
I've already seen it.
Is it good?
I saw it.
Can you say?
This is going to be polarizing. People are going to really hate it, and people are going to like it. And then people are also going to be like, meh.
Okay, I'm down.
Dan Stevens rules. Hunter Schafer is fantastic.
Excellent.
Cool. I'm absolutely fantastic. We'll talk about next episode. She's super intriguing.
I'm seeing her on Thursday, so hopefully we can talk about next episode in actual depth. And also that week, It Ends With Us, the new Blake Lively film that looks incredibly cliched and crappy, but that's his
Colleen Hoover's.
It's gonna make a shit ton of money because Colleen Hoover is like one of the best selling authors, like at this point. Like, she sells more books than God.
Oh, that trailer blows.
Oh, dude.
Blows.
I don't know what to tell you.
August
16th. It's got all the Swifties going, we'll go to it because they use a Taylor Swift song in the trailer.
I'll see it. I'm not gonna see it theatrically, but I'll definitely see it at some point.
August 16th, a 3D remaster of Coraline.
I love that movie, so I'm not going to take any. Me too, for a new generation to get a look at it, because the 3D originally was great 3D. Henry Selick did a great job of that film. And when it came to screen, it was like Henry Selick doing Neil Gaiman. For nerds like me, I was like,
also that week, Alien Romulus.
Yes.
That's probably my vote for sure.
Yeah,
I want that to be the one. Melissa.
Not Horizon Chapter 2. We won't talk about that. That got a Venice Film Festival slot. They're playing part two there.
So somebody's appealing to Costner should have enough pull that they shouldn't cancel his fucking movie. No. I disagree with this move entirely, and I think it's just studios being fucking vindictive. That's exactly how I see it as.
Well, yeah, and especially if the movie's already fucking done at this point, just release the bloody thing.
Fucking release it. I'm sick of shelving movies. I'm still pissy that we'll never see like Batgirl, and there are films that are being withheld and have been withheld from us. I just think that's just fucking garbage politics.
I agree.
It absolutely bothers me. It is, and it's something that I'm like, it's a tipping scale to much, much, much worse. And the fact that we allow that this is allowed to happen is sad. Very, very sad.
Oh, and this might be the worst trailer I've seen this year. August 23rd, The Crow.
No, horrible trailer. Horrible.
I don't know what the hell that movie is, but it's not The Crow.
No, I don't know what the final product looks like, but this trailer is pure. It feels like producers have no idea what film they're looking
at. Well, and sadly, like my feeling watching that trailer is that it's exactly that. They have no idea what this movie is. I mean, I'm fully for, like, I have no issues with them, like, taking the idea, the concept, and remaking it for like a new audience. I don't think it's necessary because The Crow is really watchable. Like, that movie still plays really, really well. Mm-hmm. This trailer is such a fucking mess, and
it's so bad.
Oh my god! Yeah, I've seen this trailer now like a bunch of times. Every time, it gets cringier every time you watch it.
The worst part is like halfway through the trailer, I'm like, is this The Crow?
Yeah.
What?
I know. Yeah. And you're watching the trailer and you're like, I've seen a trailer like this for every year that I've been watching movies for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen this
trailer. It does not bode well for the movie.
No, it's going to flop. Even if it's passable, it's going to flop like a dead fish.
I really do hope, though, that it brings people to the original, because that was actually super good. And the soundtrack to that movie is just
one of my amazing. It's one of my tentpole films on Letterboxd.
Yeah, it's so good.
Nice. Hey, this is a weird one. Did you know John Woo's remaking The Killer?
Is it Amazon?
Yeah.
Is it a Prime Video thing? Is it a series or is it a movie?
No, it's a movie.
What? Wow. And they whitewashed it from what I can tell.
Kind of, yeah. It's, I don't know what to say. That is one of the greatest action films of all time. And John Woo did not need to remake it.
And he's coming off Silent Night.
Yeah.
Which was his return to Hollywood. And it was not good. It was almost incoherent.
Yikes.
Yeah. How dare you do that to Chow Yun-fat? Fucking dare you? And I'm not going to do that whole thing of like, you're ruining the original, but because I love that people say that. I'm like, you know what, dude, you can grab the original and still plunk it in your Blu-ray player and fucking watch it. Yep. There's still nothing wrong with it. But I don't know. It makes me sad. That one makes me sad. I'm going to go. It makes me want to go back and watch Hard Boiled and Full Time Killer. And
yeah.
Bunch of other shit.
Yeah. And last, I talked about this one before, a couple episodes, a movie called Strange Darling, which looks really cool. Mm-hmm. like a little indie horror film that looks like it's written just for me. The trailer really works. I don't know. I really want to see this film. I wanted to see it for a couple months, and I'm glad it's finally opening.
Doubtful I'll get that one.
Yeah.
I know a lot about it, but yeah, I doubt that's going to come anywhere near me.
Yeah. So I'm got Alien Romulus.
Yeah, I already got my ticket, so I'm guaranteed to be seeing that one.
Okay, it works for me.
That was the easiest one in a while, I think.
Yeah, no, this movie, like, I am ready for it. I'm so ready for it.
We prepared it earlier on in this episode. We were prepared.
Yeah, we totally did.
At this point.
And it shouldn't have come as a surprise.
And hopefully we'll finally get Dee Dee and Sing Sing opening somewhere. Those movies have been delayed.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with Sing Sing. They just keep moving the release posts on that one.
Yeah. So those are highly touted films. So hopefully we'll be able to see those by next episode.
That's Colman Domingo Best Actor coming next year, right? A nomination for sure, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's Alien Romulus.
There we go.
Go Fede.
There we go.
Yep. Yep.
Hopefully. Hell yeah, Fede.
Let's hope there's enough to talk about other than, oh, this movie's amazing. Okay. So, guys, where can folks find you? The next show.
I am Bill Harris. I'm on Letterboxd and Twitter at SoundJam69. I have another podcast, Screen Screen of Death. Hopefully we're recording soon. Other than that, have a good couple of weeks.
And you can find me on Letterboxd at The Marina and on Instagram at The Marina 2. And take us off, Steve.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Threads at The Steeple Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show on there called What the Hell Should I Watch with my daughter, Chloe. It's weekly. It comes out every Friday at 9 a.m. And if you subscribe to me on YouTube, it's at Steve Stebbing, and then you'll get the notifications when those episodes come out. Also, I'm on shiftheads.ca with Shane Hewitt, who has a new show on regular radio, News 1010 in Toronto. I'm on there every Friday between 8 and 8:30 every Friday evening Pacific time. Oh, sorry, Eastern time. And then that gets rebroadcast across Canada over the weekend. And I'm also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. And our last couple episodes that we recorded today, actually, was Children of the Corn, the original, Peter Horton and Linda Hamilton and Courtney Gaines. And Firestarter, which is just another great piece in George C. Scott's very underrated career.
I love that movie.
That movie's so good. Movie's great. And it's crazy to think that it was almost a John Carpenter movie and that Darwin Jostin would play Rainbird from Assault in Precinct 13.
Wow.
It would have been a very different movie.
For sure.
But instead it was effects guy Mark Lester that made that movie. But yeah, those were fun to do. And yeah, I think that's it. That's all.
So until next time, you can check out the show notes for this week's episode at atcpod.ca. And until the next one.
Hack the planet.